Hi there, and welcome to the COSI Talks podcast. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist with over 23 years experience, and my passion is working with the amputee and limb loss community. My mission with COSI Talks is to educate, inform, and empower amputees, their clinicians, family members, and caregivers. Now, along with being a physical therapist, I'm also a wife and a mother to four beautiful children, and I'm a recent breast cancer survivor. So while I'm not an amputee and I don't know what it's like to lose a limb, I do know what it means to have my world turned upside down from one day to the next and to have to go through the recovery and healing process. And I want to help you on your journey. So let's get comfortable. Be sure to grab your favorite drink and have a listen. Ooh, don't forget, please follow this podcast and leave a 5-star review and thumbs up. And if you have any questions or overly flattering comments, drop them below. It's live. We are on time. We have audio and everything working. I have an amazing special guest for this evening. He's laughing because we weren't working a few minutes ago, but we got it going now. All right.
So, whatever works, yeah.
Yeah. Guys, for those of you watching the replay, thank you again for your continued support. Thank you for giving me shout outs in the replay. And if this is your first time watching the replay, please put replay into the comments section. It lets me know who's been watching afterwards. And also if you have any questions for me or for Ronnie here sitting next to me, I do go back and answer the questions after I've closed the show down. So those are for my replay folks. For my live folks, you guys are in the hot seat tonight. We have a brand new topic. I realize I have never in the 5 years of broadcasting, never done this topic before. And I'm like, it's a long time coming. Hey there,
yeah,
Scott.
I got pretty excited when we started talking about this concept and everything.
Right?
And it's an area that I've done a lot of work in. So excited to bring this up as part of the chat. I know it's something that a lot of people have experienced. If you're an amputee and you wear a socket, you will have experienced some version of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. And it was just kind of one of those missing pieces to my own clinical puzzle where I'm just like, you know, I know just enough to get myself in trouble, but not enough to really. So it was a good learning moment for me as well. We got Eric. What's up, Eric? We got Mark. Mark is watching us instead of sports tonight. This is huge. This means he's really stopping.
Oh boy.
We got Denise.
Hopefully we
live up to the
hype.
Right. No pressure. We got Denise coming in from North Carolina. She's my Tar Heel. We got Emily from Central PA. Her test socket actually fit today. Hallelujah. Oh my gosh, Emily, you have been running the gauntlet with that. Guys, tonight's show is going to be how a socket is constructed. And, you know, some of you would be like, well, why do I need to know that? Trust me, there's a lot of information here that you're going to want to know because it's going to help you know whether your socket is doing well or not and how to, you know, ask these questions to your prosthetist. What's going on, Donna? Thank you for joining in. We got Kimberly listening in from the YouTube channel along with Eric. Guys, just as a reminder, I do broadcast to both YouTube and Facebook at the same time. YouTube is sometimes a little bit easier to find me. We've got, I know, Andrea, I goofed on the text. I know. I said live in 15, and usually I send out the text at 8:15 to kind of give you guys time to grab your mug and come to the computer, but Mama Four Brain kicked in today. Oh, Mark is like, there's no basketball. That's why you're joining us this evening, Mark. I'm going to try not to take that personally. Eric says, I have a special socket made by Ronnie. That's right. Ronnie's the man. We got Ken coming on board. We got Lori and Jesse watching in from Wisconsin. So guys, if you're new to the show, this is kind of part of your hazing ritual. You got to let me know who you are, where you're from, and what's in your mug. I came running in from my kids' swim meet, so I did not have time to grab myself a drink. We got Ashley. Ashley, I know you're probably drinking your sweet tea over there. All right, guys, we have got a very nice crew on board, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. For those of you joining us for the first time, welcome. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist, amputee specialist, but more importantly, joining me this evening is Ronnie Dixon, certified prosthetist extraordinaire of Prosthetic and Orthotic Associates of Tennessee.
Great to be here.
Crowd goes wild. Crowd goes wild. He is no stranger to the COSI Talk studio. His clinic has been sponsoring the COSI Talk show. Now this is the second year, and I cannot continue to express my gratitude for the continued support. So thank you, Ronnie, for your support, for your time, and your expertise.
Yeah, we've got really to have some good talks and share some really good knowledge. So,
yeah, and tonight's going to be a really good one, folks. So,
you
get
see
your
me
questions.
Making faces, my cat keeps on daggering me in the side right now. So, anyways, that's what's going on.
Good to know. All right. Let's see. Ashley's like, nope, not tonight. The kids were rough today, so I got some Mick Ultra. Ashley is a special education teacher, so she's a special brand of saint right there. We've got Drew saying, my new RevoFit suction socket failed. I am sorry to hear that. Wow, these comments are flying in. Starting over with the new process. Ashley. All right. And she's like, yep, that's in your backyard right there. We got Hassan says, I'm an above the knee amputee. I'm using Ottobock 3R80 joint. My liner gets cut and destroyed within months. How do I solve this problem? My liner is 6 millimeters of Wagner. I'm going to throw that one over to you, Ronnie. Andrea's like, Kat should be daggering the fake leg.
Yeah, if only. No, she's getting me right where it hurts. So,
jeez. All right. So, guys, for those of you who haven't met Ronnie, I'm going to go ahead and let him introduce himself a little bit more and tell you a little bit about himself.
Yes. All right. Wow. Yeah. So, I've been running my own private clinic for 5 years now. My background in prosthetics goes back almost about 20 years to, 2007, 2008, when I started as a very, very young, young kid at that point, 19 years old, and have a lot of experience with smaller clinics and as such, and one large clinic where we ran our own central fabrication to make, all the stuff that goes into the prosthetics. So I'm a prosthetist, I guess is what I'm saying, that's always done his own work or worked with a team that does all of our own work in-house. It's something that we're really passionate about because I really can't imagine having not having full control over the details that go into every socket. It's not simple. It's not just an A, B, and C type thing. And everybody's body's different. So from the casting to the check socket fabrication to the laminations, each stage of it has small little things that can change or need to be accounted for. And it's more difficult, in my opinion, to have control over all of that when there's maybe multiple parties involved in making the prosthetic socket. So we'll kind of talk about a lot of that process from the very beginning today, because I know all of us will have had some experience with this, but maybe just don't even know exactly how it happens right now. So we'll try to connect some of these dots and give you some information, some knowledge that you can use to take to your appointments or that you can use to you find your next prosthetist, because you will be armed with some information and know what you're looking for.
Absolutely. And that's exactly it, guys. We're going to help you put the puzzle pieces together tonight, because obviously if you have a prosthesis, you were a part of the socket making process, unless you're an osseointegration person. In that case, you got a free ride on that one. Yeah. So hopefully we can pull the curtain back on Oz and show you what goes on behind the scenes there. Welcome, Heidi from Mid-Nebraska, drinking protein 20 protein water, right BK since 1221 due to sarcoarthropathy. When Jesse's saying, I really like my new prosthetist. All right, so guys, we're just going to go over the basics on how the traditional hand casting procedure is done for a socket. This is probably the one that most of you are familiar with, okay? So what is done is a patient's residual limb is casted, and it's either using plaster, the old-fashioned plaster, which is my personal favorite, or fiberglass material, right? Once this is all set and hardened on your limb, it's removed from your limb. And this is called the negative mold, right? You might hear your prosthetist talking about negative and positive molds. So the cast that they put on your limb, that is the negative mold, right? Then the prosthetist is going to pour the plaster into that negative mold, right, to fill it up and let it set. Once that is set and it's hardened, the old cast is removed. And what is left is the positive mold. And I'm going to show you a picture of that, because I'm getting fancy tonight and showing pictures. Viste. All right. So that is an example. Is it going through?
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. Okay. So this is an example of the positive mold, of an above the knee mold. Okay. And as you can see, it's going to look, hopefully, if it's done well, it's going to just look like the person's residual limb. Okay. So once the prosthetist has this mold, all right, they're going to do their magic and they're going to shape it and shave it down and do all the things that they do to get the pressure points and everything that they do. And I'm going to let Ronnie talk a little bit about more of those details.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, going back to the, you know, the casting procedure, you know, I kind of see it as having two different tools, you know, so a lot of times when somebody is really bony or, you know, they don't have a lot of extra flesh on their residual limb, I'll choose to cast that person out of plaster because I'm trying to capture as much detail as I can. So the plaster really allows me to pick up the fibular head, pick up the distal tibia, which is always, you know, a spot of concern for most people. And, you know, the plaster really lets me get an accurate molding, an accurate representation of how that person's residual limb looks. Now in fiberglass, if somebody has a lot of tissue, you know, they, maybe they, were really well endowed with, their calf beforehand or, any extra, you know, sometimes you will see where you get to the tibia at the bottom of the residual limb, and then there's extra redundant tissue down at the bottom, maybe 3 or 4 inches worth of tissue. Yeah, sometimes we'll, you know, I can use the fiberglass to get a little bit of extra compression, and just accomplish, you know, overall just getting a little bit more tightness, a little bit more snugness, sometimes some elongation. So, you know, it's not really a fiberglass is better, a plaster is better, but it's more of a, we can use these different tools that we have to achieve a different result. So depending on what I'm looking to get out of my casting, I will, you know, kind of pick. But I do personally, I'm a big fan of the hand casting. Because for me as a prosthetist, it's a very tactile thing of how I'm working with somebody's residual limb. So as I get, as I touch it, as I'm feeling what the bones are like underneath, or maybe where some of the problem spots have been before, I'm starting to put together the pieces of the puzzle of how do I need to shape this? How do I need to treat this to get the desired result, which is, you know, a release of pressure, pain-free, something that, you know, fits comfortably and with control. For me, if I wasn't getting that, you know, being able to actually get hands-on with somebody's residual limb, I'd be missing that whole part of my feedback. And that would be a really, really sad thing. It'd be like working with one arm tied behind my back. I wouldn't want to do that. Yeah, it's a very, very detailed part of the process for me. And I may not be saying anything, but I'm taking hundreds of mental notes of the things that I need to be paying attention to.
And that kind of brings me to my next question. So it answers my question of, are you manipulating tissues during this time? And are you trying to put the limb into a position that will be ideal for a socket? And if so, how do you, you know, how do you do that? Do you stand the patient up and cast them in standing? Do you stand, you know, cast them in sitting? I've kind of seen both techniques done.
Yeah. So on a below the knee, it's, you know, you're really not going to have too much of a difference of whether you're sitting or standing. Certainly, you know, so, and on a below the knee, I'm not doing too much manipulation. You know, so for instance, on someone who's more towards the bony side, I might be just trying to get an accurate capture of what's there. You know, where we might be doing more manipulation is, if we have a really fleshy residual limb with lots of tissue that we really need to squeeze down on, you know, that's where, you know, we might, wrap our fiberglass a little bit tighter. Or, the biggest number one mistake, it drives me insane that I can't understand how other prosthetists haven't always picked up on it, but when you have the redundant tissue and it sags down, it exposes the tibia.
Yeah.
So you want to hold that tissue up to protect the tibia. And the amount of times that that's not done is infuriating to me. So that would be an example of a special treatment that I might apply during a cast.
Yep. I was wondering about that.
And, yeah. With above the knees, Again, it just depends on presentation. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'm doing a lot of cast laying down. You know, sometimes if I'm trying to capture a very specific brim shape, I'll do that standing up.
Okay.
And actually delineate our, you know, the region where we're going to be doing our casting with maybe some straps and things like that to kind of really give me a lot of definition. Yeah, there is no one right or wrong way to do this. There are lots of different ways that you have to take and apply to the very specific situation that you're given. And someone that knows what they're doing is going to have a very, very open mind and is going to be very flexible in the kinds of things that they try because we know exactly what we're trying to achieve.
So definitely more than one way to skin a cat. No offense to the one crawling around you right now.
Yeah.
So here's another question. It just occurred to me. I'm like, do you cast them with a liner or do you factor that
in? 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. My head just hurt a little bit. Yes. I've heard of prosthetists casting the residual limb and then applying the liner to the positive model. I can't get there from A to B on that. Like, I just don't understand how that would even work. And I've never seen it work.
Okay.
So yes, you know, whenever we have a liner on top of somebody's residual limb, I'm casting over top of that.
Okay. Okay. No, it just seems to make more sense because of this. Okay. It would never occur to me.
You know, but trust me, if there's something crazy that you think would have happened, it's definitely happened.
Sometimes
I don't always have an explanation. And it drives me mad. It's the stuff that keeps me up at night. Like, it just, I'm speechless sometimes.
No, I'm laughing because I'm going, yep, I've seen some pretty crazy stuff come into my
face. Yeah.
I'm going, that's probably what happened. Then that explains a lot right there. Let's see. Ashley says, I just learned a few weeks ago that I don't have to cut my socks when I just need some cushion on the bottom. They just have baby socks that fit just the bottom. And it's been a game changer with my adjustable socket. We got John coming in from Brisbane. Holy cow. Hey, welcome, John. We got Brian Bishop, Donald coming in from Long Island, New York. We got Kenny from Virginia. We got a lot of folks from everywhere today, guys. I really appreciate you guys joining in. We got Jen. Jill says she'll be on her fourth prosthesis tomorrow. I've had second surgery on my stump, which now has to refit my leg. And it's been 2 years and I've forgotten how to walk because it's been so long. Jill, you know what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you to get thee to a PT afterwards. Let's see. Emily says, I think my first prosthetist used fiberglass and my second prosthetist used plaster. Let's see. We got a lot of comments coming in here. Let's see.
Yeah, they're flying in. You can't even keep up with them.
Yeah, no. Susan says, I always get casted with the liner on. Yep. Emily says, liner on. Yep. It just makes sense. You're right. It does make sense. Ashley says, I get two casts, one for my custom liner, and then once the custom liner arrives, my prosthetist casts for the new socket with the custom liner on. We got Harsh coming in from Richmond, Virginia. Good heavens, folks. I love all these comments. Guys, if I miss your comment or if I miss a question that you have for us, I'm going to start putting up my email now. If I miss your question, don't be shy about reposting the question or sending it straight to my email. And I check all my emails, guys. And this is a question either for me or for Ronnie. I'll make sure that he gets it. Okay, so let's move on. So guys, that is the casting part, right? We've created the positive mold, okay? After the positive mold has been created, there's two different ways, right, that the check socket can be formed, right?
Yeah.
The prosthetist will go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, just going back to the outline. So we talked about the hand casting, but then, you know, sometimes somebody might have their residual limb scanned. And that's a thing that's definitely happening more these days. You know, this can be a little bit of a slippery slope, I think, with the scanning. You know, the one thing that doesn't happen during the scanning is there's no compression to the tissue. So, you know, sometimes, you know, it just doesn't capture the leg with any sort of pressure or tightness on it. And also, too, with the scanning, for me, it's a big no personally because you just really lose that like hands-on, you know, effect of what you're actually fixing and what you're looking to modify. I mean, you know, it's possible, you know, and I do know some practitioners that, you know, do scan and create their check sockets off of scans and things like that. You know, it's a little bit too hands-off for my taste. Yeah. And, you know, the practitioners that I look up to, that I aspire to be, you know, held in the same conversation with, they all hand cast. So for what that's worth, the people that I look up to the most as an amputee and as a fellow professional, all hand cast.
I'm kind of with you there, and I have no official research studies on this one, but when I talk to my patients and I ask, you know, who's got the most comfortable fitting sockets, who are the ones, and inevitably for the most part, they were hand casted.
And the it's a slippery slope with the scanning too, because sometimes, I mean, these manufacturers are coming to the prosthetist now and they're saying, oh, well, if you just take a scan of the residual limb and send it to us, we'll send you a finished leg.
Yeah.
And that is just the absolute biggest load of baloney that I've ever heard. So you got to ask these questions. If you're getting scanned, it's doesn't mean that it's going to be bad, but you have to ask, hey, who is going to be making this? Are you going to be shaping this, or is someone else that hasn't ever seen me going to be doing this?
And then
that's a very valid question.
Yeah. And we're going to discuss that a little bit further down the line as to what questions you should be asking about that. Let's see. Hi.
Yeah.
And then go ahead.
Oh yeah. And then the measurements. This is my least favorite. Sometimes this generally gets done on above the knees, where somebody will just get measured and then a socket's just going to magically get generated by the computer. And it's just not personalized. It doesn't take into account any of your unique anatomy. And I mean, again,
and you're taking circumferential measurements, which again, you're not capturing the entire limb. You're just getting snapshots of the limb with those measurements.
Yeah, just snapshots of what it is and not any of its unique shape or contours. And, you know, same. If someone's giving you a socket that's made off of just measurements, if it were me personally, I would probably just run in the opposite direction, you know?
I mean, and it's interesting because I have an occasional viewer who will say to me, oh, my prosthetist just took measurements. And I, you know, I'll sit there and, you know, and I guess my question to them is, well, is your socket comfortable?
Yeah. And if it is, like,
it is, then,
I'm not going to hate on that at all.
Then, okay. Then, you know, then if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But usually they're coming to me asking me questions because there is something that's not working. And that's kind of something I'll ask about. All right. So guys, what happens after your prosthetist has this nice hoopy scoopy positive mold of your residual limb, right? So they go into their really cool, amazing lab with all the toys that they got back there, right? And they get this thing, this thermoplastic sheet. Okay. They will heat it in this industrial oven, which, oh my gosh, those ovens are, they could power an entire house, right? And until it starts to kind of bubble down. And I do have a kind of a cool picture of that right here. Okay. And once, let me get the picture. Okay. So you can see it's being heated and the thermoplastic is kind of bubbling down, sinking down. Okay. And then after this is done, the prosthetist is going to lay this very carefully over the positive mold of the socket. And I've got my last picture of what that's going to look like. There we go. Right. And it's going to just kind of mold itself over that positive mold. And as you can see, guys, this is the benefit of having a hand casted mold here, because you can see that this check socket is being made exactly to the form of that residual limb. Okay. So the prosthetists are going to work their magic. They're going to smooth the edges, trim lines. They use a sander. They use some sort of vacuum technique. Ronnie, I'm going to let you take that one.
Yep. When you see the black ring at the very bottom there, that is where that plastic is going to seal to. The pipe that's running up and down below that is going to pull the air out from underneath. And that's what vacuum forms everything in and gets it sealed just right.
Perfect. There we go. And then that is allowed to set for 24 hours.
Well, it varies on the material. So, you know, if you're using like a polypropylene, which would generally be, you know, that's more of an orthotics plastic, but sometimes they'll use it in prosthetics for a long-term test socket, or maybe for a definitive that's made out of plastic. I mean, that doesn't get done a ton these days anymore, but that plastic takes 24 hours for sure, because if you cut it, it spreads. So, the PETGs that we're using at our clinic, for instance, the Vivax, you know, we can pull that plastic and 10 to 15 minutes later, it's ready to trim off. So it really lends into our model, where a lot of times, you know, I'm casting a below the knee, might take me 5 minutes to pour that plaster, 15 or 20 minutes to modify it. So I can have that check socket back on that patient 45 minutes to an hour after I've casted it.
Very nice. Very nice. Heidi's commenting, I have a lot of excess flesh at the end and it's caused some problems when I get my socket. I'm always too far down in the socket, and so the socket comes above my knee. Heidi, that might actually be a sock problem. It could be part of the socket construction, but if you're not wearing enough socks, you're going to bottom out in the socket itself. So that might be something you might want to ask your prosthetist and troubleshoot. Let's see. Joan says, the question I had for my mentor is, what does a well-fitting socket feel like? And it had been so long. And Tom said, it should feel like a new pair of shoes that fit perfectly all around. Yeah. Or I use the analogy of, it should feel like a snug pair of gloves. So let's see. We got Melissa coming in from Indiana. We got Rob coming in also from Indiana. We got some Hoosiers in the house, right? Diana says, my first casting, they measured my limb with measuring tape about every inch. I did not understand how that would result in a well-fitting socket. Comadre's on board. Thank you for joining in. And then Diane says, and then I went to someone else that did a plaster mold. Well done, Diana. It is very cool to see, Emily. And whenever I have the ability to go to one of my prosthetist offices that they do their own in-house socket, I definitely always poke my head into the lab. I just like kind of seeing that thermoplastic just kind of like mold. Oh, I think
it's entrancing for sure.
Completely.
Yeah, our plastic's heated up to 375 degrees, and it just kind of melts onto the mold. It's pretty wild, yeah.
And then I do have to comment that there is a different, but you know, as Ronnie corrected me, this method isn't really used much anymore. Sometimes they'll take the thermoplastic and they will wrap it around the residual limb, and there'll be a seam that they will then trim off. But as Ronnie had pointed out previously, that we don't use that as much anymore because the seam is a weak point. A potential weak point in the socket. And it just seems like, yeah, just letting it fall all over just seems like you get the best around all the contours.
Yeah, it used to happen a lot because somebody would have their lab set up for orthotics specifically. And that that's very common practice when making an ankle foot orthosis.
Okay.
Because the whole front of that brace is cut out. So it doesn't matter that you have a giant seam there. So then when a lot of the orthotists were getting into prosthetics, that's how they went ahead and pulled it. It just had a lot of limitations. And thankfully, I haven't seen that in a really, really long time. I've seen a lot of crazy things, but I haven't seen that. So I think that's gone away, thankfully. With our test sockets, with the bubble forming that we saw the pictures of, you know, we can, one thing I love is that it's clear. So I can see inside, I can see exactly how that residual limb is interacting as it goes into the test socket. I can mark the bony prominences, make sure that, you know, there's no excess pressure on any of these areas. I specifically like putting a sock on the patient, and I can see that weave stretch, and I can see if something's getting stretched, you know, over top of a bone, and, you know, and I can make sure that, it's relieved properly so it doesn't do that. You know, we can make sure that we have our tightness down just correctly. And then I can take that test socket and I can bond it to a plate with an epoxy, and then I can walk them on that test socket. So, and then ultimately leading to the point where we would wrap it in fiberglass to reinforce it. And that person can walk out the door with that test socket. I'm pretty liberal, generous, you know, like I would let somebody who's 275, 280 pounds walk out the door on one of my test sockets, 'cause I feel that good about it. then what we would do for maybe somebody who's heavier than that is we would just, I mean, we have our own lab. This stuff isn't that expensive. We would laminate it out of carbon fiber and let them still go through the same trial process. So there's a way around all of this stuff. And there's an inherent amount of creativity that comes with being able to make your own stuff.
Yeah. That answers another one of the hot button topics sometimes on my show is people who tell me that their prosthetists do not let them take their check sockets home, which for me, I'm just like, then what is the point of having a check socket?
Yeah.
Everything feels good for 15 minutes. You can survive anything for 15 minutes.
I was like, you need to take it to the PT and let them determine if it's really going to hold up. No, I'm just kidding. I was like, send them to me. We'll figure out if it's going to really hold up or not. So guys, we haven't done a giveaway yet, and this is unacceptable. We must do a giveaway. So guys, as I mentioned over and over and over again, I depend upon the generosity of my sponsors to keep this show going. So I always like to show my sponsors some love and appreciation for this. So guys, right now I am posting the POA of Tennessee Instagram handle right there. And yes, later on in the show, we will have a Facebook contest for those of you who do not have Instagram. But I want you to go to Instagram to Ronnie's Instagram. And I'm looking at it right now to make sure we get the right one, right? You need to follow him. Okay. So please, let's see those numbers tick up. What just happened there? That was weird. Okay. And then there's a really goofy picture of me. It's the latest post. I realized, Ronnie, we got to work on the social media here because they're all.
I know we're too busy seeing and treating patients. I don't have time to make any posts. I mean,
they're all pictures of me. This is not okay.
One of these days, I promise, we'll have some really nice content on there of people doing some awesome stuff. So.
Guys, he's absolutely right. The reason why they don't have as much right now is because they are very, very busy and doing amazing work. But in the meantime, we need to help them build their social media page. So guys, follow them is what I want you to do. And then I want you to tell me in the comments section, what is the color of shirt I'm wearing in the most recent post, right? We've got a POA Tennessee t-shirt coming down the line for our winner. And it's actually a really cool shirt. It's a really cool shirt. We gave it away last time too, and it was a really neat one. All right, so Mark S. is asking, knowing that this varies, what is the average time you spend on the socket?
Sure. Okay. I think I was just trying to figure out exactly where that question was going. And if I'm reading it correctly, maybe how much time do we spend working with somebody on their socket? And that really varies.
The process of making it. You mentioned it.
Yeah.
About an hour, depending on the thermoplastic that you're using.
Yeah. I'd say that's the micro. So that's one visit, with one patient. But, in terms of total time, maybe is how I understood that question. Like, how long do we actually work with them on their socket? It just varies on how far away somebody's coming to us from. I mean, we have, people who fly in to see us. We have other people who drive two to 7 hours to come down. So it just kind of depends on how far away they came from. So to give you an example, we had a little boy come down from Kentucky, and he had grown out of his Symes socket, almost like a below the knee socket, but he still has his ankle condyles down at the bottom. And they had an 8-hour round trip. So I made the decision, since we had the time that day, to cast, modify, fit the check socket, and decide that I was happy with how it fit and laminate it all in the same day. And that took us 5 hours. We had experience working together previously. So I had a lot of prior knowledge on that particular patient. And then others, on another BK, if they live in town and they want to come by a couple times a week, we might finish that over a 4 to 6 week time frame. So it really just varies on the specific case. And then on harder cases, I'm definitely not immune to having to do 6, 7, 8 check sockets to get the right design and the right fit for the patient. Whereas sometimes on easier patients, we fit one check socket and I'm happy with it. They're happy with it and everything's great. So it's all across the board, but mostly it's just having somebody that's willing to go through the process that it needs to go through to be done correctly.
Bingo. And for those of you out there who are either listening to the show for the first time or you're new to being an amputee, this is the part I want you to really listen to. Number one, that you need the prosthetist who's willing to keep going back to that drawing board until they get the right fit. And number two, yes, it can take several check sockets and several sockets in general before getting that fit. And a huge part of that is just because your anatomy is constantly changing, especially in those first 2 years after amputation. And I know in the 5 years alone of doing this show, countless people expressing their frustration at this and not understanding that, yes, that is sometimes part of the normal process. So we've got lots of responses here. Thank you guys for participating. And we're going to do a Facebook giveaway after this. But Brian Bishop, you are our winner. So Brian, I'm going to put my email up there again. Send me your address and your t-shirt size, and we're going to get you a t-shirt sent out. So guys, thank you for participating in that. Donald says, I went to Peoria in Orlando for my first leg, and I have to go soon to get another socket because I had a revision surgery done. All right. So we talked a little bit about, you know, the hand casting technique, how the thermoplastic is put over that positive mold, right? So let's talk a little bit about the CAD-CAM, right? And CAD-CAM, how many of you have heard of that expression, CAD-CAM? Whether or not you know what it means, how many of you have heard of that? Like, show of hands in the comments section. Ashley says, yep, I went through 4 test sockets before getting a definitive socket, and that was after my revision surgery. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, I'm trying to scroll through some of these. I'm going to have to go back and read these questions again, read some of these comments.
Yeah, there's been a lot of them.
There's been a lot. This is great. I love it. That's Eric. All right. So David, Pastor David says, yes. Jesse says, never heard of it. All right. Susan says, yep. Ann says, nope. Okay. So CAD-CAM, and let me just put that into the comments section so that CAD-CAM. It's an acronym that means computer-aided design or computer-aided manufacturing, right? And this is kind of an umbrella term. This is what Ronnie was describing a little bit earlier, right? This actually, the technology's actually started, and I remember like way back when I was in school here, it was my one question on the test, CAD-CAM. There was one question on one of my tests, right? And it started somewhere in the mid-1980s, right? And then we started seeing 3D printing in the early 1990s, but it's basically encompassing and describing the technology of using 3D printers, scanners, 3D visualization software, slicing software, 3D carvers, additive and subtractive manufacturing. It's all basically using technology to create the socket, right? The scanning techniques would be considered to be computer-aided design in that regard, okay? So even though we're starting to see more of this, it still has not outpaced the traditional hand casting technique, part and parcel because it is obviously more expensive, but I think also because of prosthetists like Ronnie that they prefer the hands-on touch and they feel like they get a better fitting socket that way, okay? But basically, if your prosthetist is using a CAD-CAM technique, it's basically the shape, capturing of the shape, however that is going to be done, right? The rectification, so whatever modifications have to be done through the software, and then the actual fabrication. So one of the biggest perks on this one is in terms of storage, right? It's a lot easier to store some of the files on a computer than to have a lab full of all the molds. How long do you keep your molds? I'm wondering.
We don't, you know, so like we finish with somebody's socket, you know, there's a grace period of let's say like a couple of weeks, you know, afterwards where we might hold on to it in case any changes need to get made. And then, after that, you know, that's as long as we keep it, you know, because if that person were to come back in for an adjustment, I can always just pour plaster in their socket or pour one of my silicones in their socket and get the impression that I need, you know, should we need to kind of go back to the drawing board.
There you go.
Bob, I have a way of getting it back.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, that's an excellent question. He says, how does having osseointegration change how you fit a prosthesis? Well, the biggest one is you don't use a socket, right? So with osseointegration, the fixture is implanted directly into the bone. And we've done several shows on that, Bob. If you haven't had a chance, go back to my YouTube channel. We've done several shows on osseointegration this year already. So there's no use of a socket. As far as I'm sure there's a few alignment changes here and there simply because you don't have the bulk of a socket anymore. But other than that, you're able to use the same componentry. If you're an above the knee, you'll use, you have access to the same knees and feet that you would using a traditional socket. Let's see. Scott says, my sockets have all been hand cast and I got lucky getting my guys, even though I'm such a challenge. Yeah, well, that's awesome. Let's see. All right. So let's talk now. So we've talked a little bit about the two different major ways that a socket can be made. And guys, I repeat things a lot because I think repetition is the mother of memory. So we have the traditional casting and then we have CAD/CAM, meaning using some sort of computerized software to make the cast. Then comes, is your cast or is your socket made in-house or out? And we call that central fab versus in-house fabrication, right? So you have prosthetists like Ronnie that they do everything in-house, right? If you kind of open the door to the employees only, you're going to see all of these materials. You're going to see the thermoplastics everywhere. You're going to see these enormous ovens. You're going to see sockets and plaster molds all over through the lab, right? And they do everything in-house. Some of the prosthetists, for example, one of my favorite ones here in St. Pete, they have a clinic in a really great area, but it's very, very small. So they actually have another satellite location where they will make their own sockets. It's just not physically connected to their clinic, okay? And then we have the ability for a prosthetist to send their sockets out to be made. And I wasn't as familiar with that. This was something I kind of had to look up a little bit and do a little research on. So basically, this is how I did it, guys, is I basically Googled and I just said, you know, what companies do central fabrication, right? And I just went down the line until I found a company that picked up the phone. And the particular company that did this, they are called Prosthetics, and they allowed me permission to, you know, mention that I had spoken with them. And what they said was that the prosthetist will send the company the measurements and scans of the residual limb, or they might actually send the positive mold itself. So the prosthetist might actually make the positive mold and send that out to this company. And then that can also be scanned. So the company receives the files, they do a fabrication and of the check socket, send it back to the prosthetist. The prosthetist and the patient work on the socket, see what needs to be fixed. And either the prosthetist can then go on to make a definitive socket, or the prosthetist can send it back to the company to make that definitive socket. So thoughts, Ronnie?
Yeah, you know, lots of different thoughts, right? I mean, obviously, you know, I'll always be really outspoken for, you know, in-house, you know, really, really hands-on and being involved in every single detail that goes into the prosthesis, because each one of them is equally important, even the small ones. Yes, I think you were perfectly right in saying that some of these locations, you know, maybe they're prohibitive in terms of space. There can't be a lab there, things like that. So maybe some of these medium-sized chains, you know, one I can think of in the Tampa Bay area, they might have a location where they do their fabrication, you know, and then a location where they see the patients. So sometimes that does happen. And then, you know, so again, I think it just kind of comes down to the how and how are you being treated? Because, you know, we have these, you know, turnaround times that go along with central fabrication that make that do extend this process. And, you know, if it's taking you 2, 3, 4 weeks to get back in for a check socket visit, you know, by the time, you know, you just can't build any momentum. It's like a start, stop. And it's hard to really get into the meat and potatoes of what we're dealing with here. Whereas sometimes I personally like to attack a problem with force. So my first check socket might just be a burner in terms of like, we're going to learn what, as many things as we can about how we need to fit this. And then the second one, we're going to go and apply all that knowledge. Because each person's leg is completely specific and different. It should be really, really hard, even for somebody of my skill level, to do that when we're only having a visit like once a month or once every 3 weeks. So I would advocate for sure for the speed, because then it's on my mind, it's on the patient's mind. Hey, do you remember where it hurt last time? Well, I don't know. I saw you a month ago. I really can't remember. You know, I've had a lot happen since then. So I don't love the speed of central fabrications. And
No, and I'm gonna support you on this one, Ronnie. You know, it's one of those things
I have concerns, especially for the newer students coming up, and we see a lot of them from really, really excellent programs of they've never learned how to make any of this stuff from start to finish. And they're getting an excellent education at school from the book standpoint, but you know, even if you are having a central fabrication to your sockets, you've never spent any of the time in the trenches actually making these adjustments. So your patient's in your office and none of this stuff turns out perfect. It's going to need to be fixed. And you know, you don't have any hours under your belt making the adjustments or figuring out how you can manipulate this to make it different or to make it better. So I'm a huge advocate, especially when our students go through, you know, before we're even getting students out there with the patients, we're getting them back in the lab and learning how to do the fabrication so that they can have a solid platform to practice in their future. So all of this stuff, it's hands-on. You have to know how to fix it. It never fits perfectly the first time. And you've got to know how to take it from A to B. If the clinician has the ability to make those adjustments in house and, make a lot of changes to a socket, then central fabrication, you know, maybe might not be a bad idea if they're sticking to those turnaround times. And if you're on their mind and if you're important, but if that's not happening, it could just slow and really bring the process down, for sure. Yeah.
No, I mean, and I'm just thinking about it, running the scenario in my brain. I'm like, the only way I can think of that prosthetist would really be is space. You know, if they simply do not have the space and they don't have the financial ability to in-house, but I would think they'd have to be extremely on the ball about making sure that wherever they're sending it to is giving them that quick turnaround time. If they have, it's like you said, you know, how many check sockets, and that they know that they themselves have already had the experience of doing the whole process. Otherwise they're not going to know exactly what you said, how to make those changes, how to instruct the person who is making those changes and making that check socket, right? How to direct. Personally, I prefer working with the prosthetists that have their in-house lab right there.
Yeah, happens. Like, we're extremely good at what we do, and we never intentionally do anything wrong, but I can do a lamination and the plate just gets accidentally moved a quarter inch in one direction and the whole entire thing needs to get redone, you know? But when we do the laminations in-house, it's not that hard and we can correct our mistake right away. But, you know, when you're working with the central fabrication, a mistake like that, either the patient has to live with it or that could take 4 weeks to get turned around again. It's crazy.
Well, and then I wonder if you're stuck in that turnaround loop, sending back and forth, the patient's limb, especially in those first 2 to 3 months, is changing so rapidly, that can you keep up with those changes? Or is the person, by the time they get that check socket back, they're going to have to put on 10 ply socks.
Oh, I know.
Right? It's definitely, I always like to keep an open mind about things and just say, well, these are the options, right? And I'm sure there's prosthetists out there that use, central fab, and they have great results and they've made it work for their practice. But in general, I'm like, I like to see a lab when I walk into a prosthetist clinic.
Yeah, 100%.
Emily says, my first prosthetist had to send my socket out. My current prosthetist has the lab in-house, so much nicer and more convenient. Yeah. So Jesse asks a very good question. Should I ask my prosthetist to do a cast mold instead of measuring me? How should someone approach?
It'll tell you a lot about that person. If they're not willing to do it, then, you know, you might have some other questions to ask, you know? I had one person come to me specifically, and her words exactly were, well, yeah, my guy just didn't like to get dirty. And that's just a poor excuse for not.
Why would you be a prosthetist? It doesn't make sense.
I don't know. Some people want to put on a tie and go to work. I mean, I'm personally covered in dust most of the day and I love it, you know?
I was like, every good prosthetist I know, they have plaster under their fingernails. That's just how it, you know. Anyways, so Jesse, I guess the other question I would ask is, you know, if you're being measured, does your socket fit well? You know, if your socket fits well, then okay. But, you know, if your socket is not fitting well, then yeah, I think it's completely reasonable to ask your prosthetist to see if they can do a casting technique on you. So let's see. Emily says that was my biggest issue with my first prosthetist is that there were so many big gaps in between appointments, and this is the one that would send it out.
Yeah. Answering Scott, when we do the cast, we still take a bunch of measurements as well. But if you're only just getting measurements taken, then yeah, that's a concern for sure.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, so Bob has a very interesting question. What is Ronnie's opinion of the Revo socket compared to the sockets that hold the prosthesis versus the Velcro Titan socket, brand forgotten? I think you're probably asking about the Revo fit versus the Martin Bionics adjustable socket.
Yeah.
Ronnie knows what I think about this. So I'm a.
No, same. I'll posit it like this. We've all gotten dressed up to go to a wedding or some sort of formal function before, you know, and you know, you could buy a suit from the store and it'll fit okay. Or you could have that suit custom tailored and that suit is going to fit your body's measurements really, really well. Imagine if you had a suit where you would actually pull different strings and different widgets to have to make it fit that way. And that's kind of almost what I think of the Revo, you know, and of the other brand. I just personally, I think that there are additions or tools that can be added to very, very specific sockets. In my practice, it's less than 5% to achieve a better outcome. But a lot of times they're getting used as a substitute for poor design. And you can't put a Revo on a poorly designed socket and expect it to work. You can't have a strap on a poorly designed socket and expect it to work. The socket has to be designed properly. It has to fit well. And then sometimes in some very specific situations that can improve the outcome. But too many times and too often these days, it's getting branded as this save or this, you know, this thing that can fix everything and fix all the problems. And that just doesn't happen. And I'm not a big advocate of it. And if someone were coming to me and that's what they want, I'm probably not the person to make them that product.
And then Bob, just to kind of piggyback on that answer, you know, I do work a lot with folks who have the RevoFit socket. I cannot comment on the Martin Bionics. I don't have as much experience there. And I agree with Ronnie in the sense of saying it's not meant to fix an ill-fitting socket, right? The point of the RevoFit or having an adjustability in the socket is exactly that, to adjust the fit. If you are not someone who wants to wear socks or you're having to take the socket on and off all day because you do have a lot of limb volume fluctuations, you know, this is a conversation to have with the prosthetist about. Okay, so the purpose of the RevoFit is added into a socket that your prosthetist is making. So if your prosthetist is not great at making a well-fitting socket, then adding adjustability to it is not going to make it any better. And the same thing goes for, we've had this conversation about vacuum suspension systems, right? Where sometimes we'll see folks that they try to use vacuum suspension, elevated vacuum, to improve the fit of a socket. And that's not going to work. It's meant to enhance a fit. It's meant to put the cherry topping on that sundae. But if you're using that to achieve the suspension, then you're going to be up a creek without a paddle, right? And I will say the same thing. And guys, it's no secret. Click Medical is one of the sponsors on my show. And I love the Click Medical RevoFit socket. But I will say, yeah, if your socket is not comfortable and well-fitting, it doesn't matter what you put on it, it's still not going to work. Okay, your prosthetist still has to be skilled at making a socket. So it's something, Bob, that when I see this, I go, talk to your prosthetist, right? Talk to your prosthetist, ask them if this can be a viable option for you and what are your expectations? Like, what is it that you're hoping to solve by adding adjustability into your socket? These are the questions that you need to ask, because there is no one fit solution. And I'll say it, there's no one fit solution for everybody. So if you're adding something to the socket, if you're taking away something from the socket, you need to ask yourself, what am I improving in my mobility with this or in my comfort level? Okay, so let's see. Uh, All right, guys. Sorry, guys, I'm trying to like flip through these comments right now. So Ashley says, my prosthetist does measurements for the insurance justification, but then does the plaster casting.
Yep.
So the actual socket construction. Yep.
Yeah, we keep all the measurements. I can actually see what's changed. You know, so for instance, you know, I had a below the knee patient come in about a year ago. We took measurements, and then he came back 8 months later, and many of his measurements had changed by over an inch. You know, so I knew that we were in that replacement socket territory. You know, because that's just more than what we're able to adjust. You know, especially with where they happened. I mean, the bottom of his leg became very pointy. So the measurements are kind of like a snapshot in time in terms of like what changed and where.
Okay, there we go. All right, guys, we're going to do our second giveaway right now. This one's for our Facebook folks. So once again, I am going to post the link to the POA of Tennessee Facebook page. Okay. Y'all need to go to the page, like it, follow it. Okay, follow them on Facebook, and I'm going there right now, and I'm gonna tell you guys right now what you're gonna do. I just had it a minute ago and my screen blanked out on me. Okay, so guys, go to their most recent post. Okay. And tell me, what are they doing in that picture? What instrument are they using in that post? This is kind of cool. All right.
Yeah, sorry, we haven't updated the Facebook either. That's under construction.
I'm like, Ronnie, okay. No, you literally need a full-time person to manage that. That's a full-time position right there. Yeah, it is. So Emily says, my first prosthetist did a vacuum or suction suspension, but it never fit. My current prosthetist did a pin lock and it fit with some adjustments on the first fitting. My current prosthetist has 40 years of experience versus, you know, the other prosthetists that perhaps didn't have as much, you know, and again, so, and Emily, you know, yours was a story where you had a lot of bumps on the road and you had to start asking yourself, okay, is this the right fit for me in terms of a prosthetist as well and clinician? And Lord knows we've done lots of shows on that in terms of how to choose your prosthetist. What should you be looking for? What are some of the red flags? And Ronnie is definitely very outspoken about that, which I love.
Yeah. And Ashley had a really great comment too. I mean, you know, it sounds like she had a really comfortable fitting socket and then they added in the adjustability to accomplish a specific task. So again, it wasn't that they made it adjustable just because to try to make the socket fit. They, you know, had a specific issue that they were looking to address and it did that well.
Mm-hmm. And I know here in Florida, for example, hot, sticky, humid, you guys hear me talk about it all the time. A lot of my Floridians, when they choose to use the Revo fit, a lot of it is because they don't want to wear as many socks because it's so warm. So having that adjustability allows them to do that. But again, they are wearing sockets that are well made. So that's the starting point right there. All right, guys. Yes. Barry, thank you for participating in this. All right. So our winner, what were we doing? We're doing a $50 Amazon gift card.
Yep.
Right. I'm going to give you guys another 30 seconds. That probably got your attention more, right? Go to the Facebook page. Follow, I know it would have gotten my attention, right? Follow Ronnie on Facebook and then tell me what is the name of the contraption that they are using in that most recent post. So here's another question for you.
Go for it.
And this is one that a few weeks ago I had a somewhat snarky viewer, right? Tell me that prosthetists aren't the ones that are building the sockets. That's for technicians to do. And I just thought that was a very interesting comment. Who makes the sockets? Like you utilize prosthetic technicians and that's a reasonable thing to do in a clinic. How do you use them in the socket making process?
Yeah. So, I mean, generally, at my clinic, you know, we do so many different styles of designs and things like that. You know, I have two dedicated prosthetic technicians. One primarily does a lot of the check sockets. He does our custom liner molds. He pours all of our silicone. And the other one focuses more on the laminations, maybe some of the posterior mount blades, the double wall sockets. So it really just depends. And then every single practitioner in our clinic, all four of us, can make every single product that we provide a patient. So we know exactly how it was made. If something's not working, we know how to fix it. And if one of our technicians is out sick, the work still gets done. So we can all step back there and make every single one of our products that we provide for our patients. So it's really, really important. And it's part of our core values is the stuff matters. The little details matter. And yeah, there is some old school snarkiness, like 80s and 90s stuff, like, oh, the technicians make the legs and we, the prosthetists, are too good for that. That's BS, you know? We all got to get back there, get our hands dirty, because we're, at the end of the day, we have someone's life that we're trying to improve, someone's life that we're trying to help, and there's no room for politics or for snarkiness. We're all part of the same team that are working on scoring that touchdown for that patient, so...
Yeah, I just thought it was, I was chuckling when that comment, and that comment came around about a month or two ago, and I was just kind of chuckling about that. And I'm like, so what do you do then? If you're not making the prosthesis, what are you doing? Yeah, but I kept my mouth shut at that point. So there you have it, guys. All right. Thank you guys for responding. Our winner for our Amazon gift card is going to be Jen Lyons. So Jen, thank you so much. Jen, please, I'm going to post my email again. Jen, send me an email with your name and your address, and we will be shipping you your gift card. Awesome. Ronnie, thank you again for that. And guys, thank you. I mean, even if you didn't win the prize, please go to the POA Tennessee Instagram and Facebook page. Start following them. He is going to get something up there, right?
We're gonna one get of these days, right? Everybody's going to get some sort of a post, and they're going to be like, who's this person that I'm even following? You know, like... Oh yeah, that was like 2 years ago. And you know, yeah, this prosthetist guy that was talking about all this crazy nonsense, you know.
It's awesome. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. Yeah. So guys, I actually do want to kind of add, because when it comes to the, you know, prosthetic technician, they're definitely utilized much differently than a physical therapist technician. So I kind of just want to segue my little PT soapbox into there. If you're receiving physical therapy services, guys, number one, the physical therapist should be the one always doing the evaluation, not the physical therapist assistant, certainly not a physical therapy tech, right? By law, the physical therapist has to be the one doing the assessment on you and coming up with your plan of care. Now, the physical therapist might pass you off to the physical therapist assistant, the PTA, right? They are extremely, they are the extension of our hands, right? And for the most part, they can do almost everything that a physical therapist is licensed to do. There's just a few treatments here and there that if they have to be done, the physical therapist is the one seeing it. After the physical therapist assistant, then you have the PT tech. And again, I say this because PT tech, not the same responsibilities that a prosthetist tech will have, right? A PT tech, I was a PT tech, guys, as a teenager, okay? A PT tech does not necessarily have any kind of formalized training other than basic CPR, right? They are there to help run the plant operations of the clinic, to turn the beds and the plinths over, to perhaps set a patient up for exercise, okay? For the most part, the physical therapist or the physical therapist assistant should be the one directing your treatment, right? And this is my big pet peeve. When I see a patient coming in and they tell me that the tech is the one who does all of their treatment with them. And that's a huge no-no. Okay. So short abbreviated soapbox done over right there. So Denise says, my socket fit is fantastic. I also have an offset built in that has made a huge difference in my leg not bowing out anymore. And I've said it many times that I am very fortunate to have an awesome prosthetist who has worked with me and my entire support from team as needed. So just to kind of wrap things up with a nice bow, you know, Ronnie, if someone is interviewing, right, for a new prosthetist, or they're not sure, what are some of the questions from the socket construction standpoint that they should be asking that prosthetist?
Yeah, you know, super simple. You know, the question would be very direct on my end. Are you going to be the person who's making my leg, or is somebody else going to be the one making this? And so by making it, I mean, are you going to be the one that's shaping it, or are you leaving the shaping up to somebody else? Because then I might as well just go to that person to get my leg shaped, because, you know, I'm here to you so you can shape my leg. You know, it's a little, whether the socket gets made somewhere else is a different story. And that might turn out okay. But I'd want to at least make sure that the person seeing me is actually the one shaping my leg. And then, Bonus points for sure if they do in-house fabrication, and if they have the ability to do that and work on that. And a lot of times, again, my favorite thing, I would say, if you can drop in on a clinic, so almost unannounced, like, hey, just wanted to come by, I'm interviewing some different people for a prosthetist, and I just wanted to see how your place was. And that'll tell you a lot about their willingness and receptiveness to work with adversity, and to kind of, maybe they are having a busy day, but are they willing to give you the 5 minutes to say hello and to introduce themselves and to say, hey, we're really happy to have you here. And those things are going to go a long way. If they're giving you customer service kind of under fire like that, then when you're the star of the show, when your appointment time comes around, I would expect that you'd probably get pretty good service.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm a huge advocate for that. And same thing goes for the PTs, guys. Don't be afraid to put us on the spot and drop in on a clinic and say, if there is a therapist available, to speak to them for a few minutes and ask them questions, or here is my information, please have someone get back to me because I'd like to ask them questions. And you should get a phone call back, so at the very least. Yep. All right, guys, this has been heck of a show, Ronnie. Thank you.
Yeah.
We covered a lot of stuff tonight. And I think our folks are happy with the show that they got tonight. I'm seeing the comments in here. So guys, as always, if I did not get your question right, please forgive me. There's my email. Send it to me. If you have a question that you want me to pose to Ronnie, again, send me that email and I will be sure that he gives me an answer
for that question.
So guys, we have one more show left this year with Ronnie. One more show left this year. And I know it's going to be an amazing show as well. But in
mystery
the
show so far. We have no idea what it's going to be. did I spilled the beans?
It's the mystery show. Yep. So guys, as always, thank you, Ronnie, for your time, your support, and your expertise. So greatly appreciated. And guys, thank you for letting us be a part of your lives this evening. Next week is general Q&A, so it's open season on the PT. God help me.
Gosh, good luck with that.
It's like I never know what I'm going to have coming at me. But guys, thank you again. And we will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.